Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Line Cook Thoughts podcast. I'm your host, Ray DeLucci, and just want to welcome you back. My guest today is Chef Selena Progar. And, you know, before I kind of tell you about her, I just wanted to say that I think it's so important that we as an industry look at allergens and look at, you know, customers and diners who need, you know, special accommodations due to their allergens. You know, everyone deserves to eat a good meal. Everyone deserves to have food that they're able to access. And so for me, it's super important to highlight chefs in the industry that work within the realm of gluten-free baking or, you know, allergen awareness in terms of their cooking. So that's why I wanted to have Chef Selena on. I wanted to talk about this bakery she runs. Also, I know that through the pandemic, she had built it. And so I just think it's a really great episode. In it, we talk about, you know, her creative process and the creative process of being a pastry chef. We then talk a little bit about her career, and then we get into gluten-free baking, kind of the challenges, the misconceptions, and also how she makes products that she thinks rivals or even betters a traditional product. So I'm very excited for you to hear this episode. But before we begin, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Chef. Born and raised in Washington, Pennsylvania, Selena got her start with baking during the holidays with her family. Growing up in a traditional Slovenian and Polish family, she started with potica, apple strudel, and kraft, but as she entered high school, she started experimenting with cakes, breads, and chocolates. When it came time to decide what college to attend, it was a simple choice. She chose the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. There, she entered the baking and pastry program, where she started honing in skills in petit gâteau, artisanal breads, wedding cakes, and truffles. After graduation, Selena became a heavyweight in the pastry scene, with titles like head pastry chef at La Gourmandine, several years in Four Diamond restaurants in Utah and Massachusetts, and serving most recently as the executive pastry chef of a AAA Four Diamond award-winning pastry department. Selena brings an incredible amount of expertise to the gluten-free kitchen she runs. Selena is ready to tackle the gluten-free world, from cookies to donuts to bagels to naturally leavened breads and more. She's excited to keep learning a whole new style of baking that will change how you think of gluten-free baked goods. And just off their website, they're very excited for you to try what she's baking at Gluten-Free Goat Bakery 2.0, where they will be bringing pastries to the people that everyone, gluten-free or not, can share and enjoy together. A little bit about their products. All products are gluten-free, soy-free, and peanut-free. They offer a variety of vegan options as well. And yeah, like I said, I'm just so excited for you all to hear this. Once again, the bakery is out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's called Gluten-Free Goat. It's a gluten-free bakery. And yeah, I just think it's a very important topic. I think if you're going to be in the restaurant industry and you're going to be in hospitality, you need to be able to cater to everyone in the industry, all your guests, all your consumers. And while it's easy to write off someone who's gluten-free, and I know, you know, in the restaurant industry, that can be something where it's like, oh, you're gluten-free, like, you know, why or what? But people have actual conditions to where if they eat stuff, they can't enjoy their meal, or even worse, it hurts them negatively. So I think it's super important. I think it's so cool, the work that Chef Selena is doing. I'm very excited for you to hear this episode. And I just want everyone to, you know, listen, enjoy, and recognize the challenges that are there. But also what I found most interesting, the opportunity to learn more, to learn new in the food industry, to have a whole skill set that maybe not many people have. So thank you so much for Chef Selena for coming on the show. Thank you everyone for listening. And here we go.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. If you'd like to just introduce yourself to the audience, that'd be great.
Yeah. Hi, my name is Selena Progar. I'm currently the head baker at Gluten Free Goat in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Awesome. I actually have a best friend, Kathleen, who's from Pittsburgh. So I hear it's a great city.
It is.
It's definitely a booming city. It's friendly and has a lot of talent here right now. So it's a good place to be.
Yeah. We always joke around because I'm from Buffalo and I'm a Bills fan and she's a Steelers fan. So.
Oh, no. That's okay.
I mean, you know, we did actually make it to the AFC Championship last year.
So. I mean, I can't say anything because the Steelers won 17 or something games in a row and then lost that first game. So, I mean, it was pathetic to say the least. Yeah.
I mean, the Bills lost every season since I've been alive until like 4 years ago. So.
Well, there you go. You deserve that AFC Championship.
Yes, definitely. Awesome. Cool. Well, I like to start my interviews basically just by asking like where you're from, which you've already said, but maybe how you got into food.
Okay. So, I am from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, and I grew up in a small town outside of Pittsburgh that was heavily influenced by Slovenian and Polish culture, and that gave me, I grew up with like my grandma and my dad baking that traditional Slovenian and Polish food, which kind of ignited my love for baking. We made petitza and apple strudel and pierogies pretty much every holiday, and that just really got me into food. So I think like the really intense, like hearty, like hunky tonk food of Pittsburgh, like kielbasa and pierogies are really, it's really popular here. So it's just something that you can't avoid. So getting a chance to do that is really, got me interested.
Yeah. I'm also Polish. My family is Italian Polish. So definitely a big fan of Polish food.
Yeah.
Buffalo has a very large Polish population actually. So it's pretty cool. And
yeah,
so that's how you got into baking. Now I guess maybe a weird question, but like, have you, I guess, why gluten-free? Is this a personal, like for you, you need to eat gluten-free, or what kind of was the driver behind that?
So, I am not gluten intolerant. I don't have any kind of celiac disease. I absolutely love bread and all baked goods. But during the pandemic, when all the restaurants closed down, I made cakes out of my house. And I actually got a lot of people who wanted gluten-free cakes because there was nothing in the city that was offering it at the time. And, so I pretty much went back into my notes from Chef Coppedge at the CIA and, remembered how to like sanitize my pans and scrub my oven down and just make sure that like the environment was safe, that I could bake like gluten-free products at my house. And, I made those cakes for people. But then whenever we all went back to work, we got, called back, and I just didn't have time to make cakes anymore. And I realized that there was nowhere to get gluten-free cakes or gluten-free baked goods from the city. And then I was just given this opportunity that I couldn't pass up because I had forged like really good relationships with, the gluten-free community during the shutdown. So I think it was like definitely personal. For sure.
Wow. I didn't realize that it was so soon that you had kind of transitioned into this.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a little over a year, not really. And then I've only been at this bakery for 4 months. Yeah.
Well, the reason I want to have you on is I wanted to discuss gluten-free baking because I think it is, at least for me, it's something I would like more knowledge on. But before, you mentioned that going to the CIA, we're both CIA grads in that regard. How was your time at CIA, or the Culinary Institute of America, for anyone who's not aware of the nickname?
So I loved going to the CIA. Honestly, so I went back in 2010. I'm not sure when you graduated, the curriculum was much different then, but still, nonetheless, getting those 3 weeks of immersive training in each topic was something that I don't think you can compare it to any other culinary education, period, whether it's culinary arts or baking and pastry. Also, getting the opportunity to just do baking and pastry and not having to go to through a culinary degree first and then get accepted into the baking and pastry program was also super important to me. So the CIA really offered all of that, just something that they trained you so well in different topics that whenever you left school, you were able to start like with a few stepping stones in any aspect, whether you wanted to work in kitchens or work in a bakery where you decorated cakes or a bakery that had breads available. I mean, you really had such talented chefs there that you just had the opportunity. You had so many opportunities from the get-go.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, my time at CIA was similar where a lot of opportunities came up, a lot of different things I was able to work on. So definitely aligned with you on that. Yeah. I graduated in 2018. So not too far, or not too long ago, only a few years.
Yeah. I do envy like the later graduates, because especially the baking and pastry, because they get to take a wines course now and they get to work in the restaurants, and I didn't get either of those. They didn't have it as it came shortly after I left. They actually just introduced the culinary science degree as part of the bachelor's program when I was graduating there. So, I mean, the amount of change that they did in the last 10 years was pretty much starting when I left.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, yeah. It is pretty cool that they are offered now wines courses and restaurant work. So, you know, but I mean, there's stuff there now that I wish I was there for, you know, it's always evolving. So,
yeah. It's definitely one of those places that you always kind of want to go back to. It's like, I know I spent so much money to go to school there, but like, it's almost like, I just keep taking my money, keep teaching me.
So,
it really is.
It really is.
Cool to hear. So what, I guess if you wanted to just give a brief overview of some of the, like the work you did before starting this bakery, like where I know I looked at your bio and you had some pretty impressive restaurants. I know you were working for like AAA rated restaurants and whatnot. And so what was that work like for you?
Right. I mean, it was amazing. So when I was 22-ish, I moved to Nantucket, and that was my first opportunity to work in a kitchen. And that was a Four Diamond restaurant, and just getting to work hand-in-hand with the executive pastry chef on the line, working a prefix menu, pre-desserts, tasting menus. I mean, it was so intense. The atmosphere was buzzing at all times. You just felt so involved and so busy. It was a wonderful experience that
awesome.
Unless you work on the line ever, I'm sure that the majority of people in the culinary industry do, but like baking and pastry, I feel like you don't have that opportunity to work on the line very often. It's just really one of those experiences that you can't really describe to anybody else. I mean, it's wonderful and terrible all at the same time.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So then I moved to Utah. There I worked at the Montage in Deer Valley.
Okay.
That was a five-star resort. And our pastry kitchen provided desserts to the five-diamond restaurant Apex. And then we also did like alcoholic milkshakes for the bourbon and burger restaurant, and then we did banquet desserts there. So that was just an experience working in a corporate atmosphere with like exceptional hospitality at every single aspect of your job. It was very intense and very high level that I mean, it was like unlike anything I've ever worked in my entire life. It's not for everybody. Corporate is very difficult to work in, but nonetheless, it was a great learning experience that I don't think that I would ever trade for anything. You really got to see that fine dining on a level where you're serving like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people a day. Mm-hmm. So then after that, I moved back to Pittsburgh, and that's when I became the executive pastry chef at a Four Diamond restaurant called Altius Modern Bistro. And there I was involved in day-to-day activities in the pastry kitchen, scheduling inventory, and then creating the dessert menu that ended up winning quite a few awards in the city. I was super proud of it. I mean, seeing the thoughts that came to my head in the middle of the night that woke me up come to life on a plate, where it was absolutely one of the most rewarding experiences of my entire life.
So for your creative process, obviously you're a creative person. What is that like where you're, maybe you think of something at night or you think of something and you go to implement it? What is your process like to get that idea into like actually be something that goes on the plate?
Right. So, a lot of people who are in baking and pastry can draw, and I cannot draw to save my life. I can't picture something and then put it like into, like, I can't like visually express myself in any other way other than to make the product and put everything in front of me and then start putting it on the plate. So, okay. I mean, like, I'll just wake up in the middle of the night and I'll have a notebook or I'll have my cell phone and I'll just start typing up like flavor ideas, or I'll start like thinking like, oh, what if I could do it in this shape? Or, and so then I'll get on the internet and try to find like a certain mold that had excited me, or just go back into the kitchen and start making pastry creams, whipped creams, you know, mousses, cakes, and just start literally taking each of those aspects, putting them in piping bags with different tips, freezing them in different molds, cutting the cakes in different shapes, and then laying out a dozen plates in front of me and start applying them to the plate. I would have my my sous chef there with me. His name was Scott, and he would just stand there and he would like give me his advice, and like he would tell me what he thought was working, and together we would just concoct these plates. So I mean, we would just stand there and we would put everything in quart containers and pine containers and you know, sheet trays in front of us, and just take it off of out of those individual entities and put them on the plate. And then sometimes it really didn't work. Sometimes it took a few tries. Sometimes it didn't taste good. And then with that, that's where you start. And then you go from there, and okay. you just keep trying until you get it right. And okay. you then you have to implement it into service. So you have to see, okay, so I created it once. Can it be created in under 4 minutes, plated up in the middle of a Saturday service? Like, is that feasible? And then you yeah. go for, and then you go from there. So it's not like I wake up one night and I had a dream and I created a dessert and it worked. That never happened. Maybe once. it takes a lot of R&D to get to that point where you're comfortable with putting it on the menu and knowing that every single time the guest is going to get the same product.
Yeah, no, I could definitely see how that is, especially with baking. Like with cooking, yes, there's R&D involved, and I mean, especially when you get more fine dining, like things need to be very exact. But with baking, like I feel like it always needs to be consistently the same, because you want that. You can't have, I don't know, a pie that comes out different every time, because this is not going to work out. Your customers aren't going to be happy. So, yeah, it's interesting right. for sure.
Right. And I mean, like we would do different. One of our favorite things to do were diplomats, because you can a diplomat is pastry cream, a flavor, whipped cream, and gelatin. And you can really create just about anything with a diplomat cream. So we really leaned on that pretty heavily. But getting it, so if you wanted to flavor it with a puree versus, say, chocolate, the freezing was different. So you had to adjust water ratios. You had to adjust your gelatin ratios. So like, and then if you wanted it in a specific mold, so say the dome, you have a more of a hearty substance. Like you have 4 ounces of solid mousse in front of you. Whereas if you're using like a tourbillon mold, which is maybe 2 millimeters thin and it has ripples throughout the entire thing, it's going to freeze entirely different. So okay. it's just continuously testing things and seeing how it holds once it's thawed and stuff like that.
Cool. Well, thank you for sharing all that.
Yeah.
So I'd love to get into the business you are currently operating in now, and that is obviously gluten-free goods. And so I guess my first question is, what are the biggest challenges you face when starting out making gluten-free product? Because from my experience in talking to people in the industry, it can be something that can be very challenging at times. So what has that process been like for you?
So the biggest issue with like R&Ding your gluten-free goods is making sure that they have a good mouth texture.
Okay.
Because whenever you have gluten-free goods, a lot of times it's one of two things: super dry and it just crumbles, or it's super gummy and you have to like work to chew it, and it's yeah. like it's very similar to gum, and because you have to use starches and gums to replicate gluten. So we'll use, so in a baked good, we'll use some gluten-free flours like rice flour, oat flour, teff, buckwheat, something along those lines. Then you have to use some, then you have to use some starches. So they could be tapioca starch, potato starch, or arrowroot, or any really anything, corn starch if you wanted to. Then you have to decide if you want to add like guar gum or xanthan gum or like psyllium husk powder. Those are the binders.
Binders.
So then you had to play with ratios and go from there. So say you pull a recipe up off the internet and you make it and it's terrible. So, I mean, if you don't know how those ingredients work with one another, then you're not going to know where to go from there. So, but what you can do is I did a fair bit of research based on what you can substitute out for certain things. So if you're using xanthan gum, so xanthan gum is a pretty intense manufactured gum that binds things together. A lot of people are really sensitive to xanthan gum. So what you can do is you can sub out psyllium husk powder, which is a fiber as opposed to a gum that also binds. Or you could use eggs, like whipped eggs or egg whites, like a meringue in it to sub out some of those things to heighten the protein. You can add more solid fat like butter. So it's just test again. So yeah,
I mean, I could definitely see how it could be challenging. You know, I'm also not someone who's gluten intolerant, but actually one of my best friends is gluten intolerant, and she also bakes, and so she was sharing with me, you know, some challenges that you could face when going into these products. So could you go, if you don't mind, going back to the flour, the starch, and the binding agent. So so if you were to have a piece of, I mean, obviously, like, yes, the starch would replace the starch in bread, but what exactly are those three things doing to form a gluten-free product that kind of mimics what gluten would do in a situation?
So gluten is the strands of protein that, I mean, whenever you mix it, it creates structure in the product. So what you're doing with the starches, with, so you have the starch, the flour, and the gum, or whatever you're subbing the gum out for. So the starch is going to create the elasticity.
Okay.
The gum is going to bind it. And then the flour is just the, without sounding silly, it's the flour. It's like the bulk item. So you're using those three cohesively together to try to recreate the gluten structure of certain products.
Okay. Yeah.
So I mean, they kind of play off each other. And the biggest, one of the biggest things is that, like, especially whenever you're mixing the product, you want to make sure that all of those ingredients are mixed together beforehand. And then you add your liquids, because if you add your liquids and it hits like a pocket of gum, then you're just going to create a nasty, it's kind of like gelatin.
Whenever you clump up pretty hard.
Yeah. It can clump up really hard. It creates like a really slimy texture. So you said that, so it's, just making sure that those ratios are correct. I don't know. Did I answer that question correctly?
Perfectly. No, I just really wanted a base understanding. I know that was like really a basic question, but I just wanted to like make sure that I had it in my head correctly of what was going on. And no, you answered it perfectly. And I've also tasted unmixed xanthan before, maybe not in bread, but in like sauces or stuff, and it's not the best.
I mean, even whenever we're baking, I'm kind of thankful that we still wear our masks in the kitchen, because xanthan gum also does not smell good. It's kind of sour. So it has a very like acidic property to it, which is also something that you have to take in consideration whenever you're making your products.
Acidic, so like the flavor is acidic, or is it acidic in a way that would affect the product structurally?
It's acidic like in the way that it would affect the product. So like you can, if you were to like add buttermilk to something, like you could really throw off the balance.
okay.
of the baked good, because it would just be too much acid in the baked good.
What was the first gluten-free baked good you made that you were like, I got it. Like, I nailed it. It's good. Let's sell it.
It was the cookies that we have at the bakery right now. Those are like my favorite product that we have on the menu right now. It's as simple as it sounds, like going from working at, you know, a Five Diamond restaurant to making chocolate chip cookies. I absolutely love them. We use different flours in our cookies. So in our chocolate chip cookie, we use oat flour because it has a really mild, like caramel note to it. And then we use house-made vanilla extract. So those balance really nicely together. And then we have a butterscotch oat cookie that we make that we use brown teff flour in. And that brown teff flour has a really earthy, nutty flavor to it. And it really, we burn and caramelize our oats in addition to having that earthy teff flour. So it just is really dark and bold and caramel.
No, awesome. Well, thank you for sharing that. And so I guess my next question, obviously, like when you're creating these goods, a lot of people are going to be like, well, I like the original thing. What are some misconceptions from like customers on gluten-free baked goods? And do you often find yourself maybe not, I don't want to say proving people wrong, but being like this is also a way of baking that you should be trying?
Yeah. So I think like the biggest misconception is that you, are going to get a dry product or you're going to get like a super gummy product. I am definitely one of those people that like from the moment I started here, I had about 4 weeks to start creating my menu. So that was like a bunch of testing and R&Ding. And I just every single day made the attempt to make my product as close as humanly possible to the real product. So from the beginning, I've been telling people, just try it. That's all you have to do. Just try it. Like, that's all I want you to do. Just tell me that it doesn't taste like brioche. Tell me this doesn't taste like a donut, because I can prove to you it does. So that's my, and I've done a few, we've done a few things where we give our product away, like to different businesses, or like we've done pop-ups where our ultimate goal is to just continuously show people that we are creating a product that is delicious, not just for gluten-free, that it's just good because it's a good bakery.
Yeah. I think that's important. I think a lot of times, I mean, especially in food, obviously everyone is set in their ways of what they want to eat and how they perceive things. And I feel like, you know, with gluten-free products especially, there can be like, you know, that like, oh, I don't want gluten-free, or it's automatically assumed it's not going to be as good. I think that it's important to just see things as products, and like, you know, I think it's really cool what you're doing and that you're really trying to make not like products that are, it doesn't seem like you're trying to make products that are like a gluten brioche in a sense. It sounds like you're making just a very good brioche regardless of if it's gluten or not. So I think that's cool.
Right. And I mean, like, I think that the issue with gluten-free baking is that it has been ignored for so long that people just were like, well, it's inconvenient to have a certified gluten-free bakery, because you can't ever bake anything that is a regular gluten or flour in your bake shop if you have a certified gluten-free bakery. So like, it's one or the other. Otherwise then you have to tell your guests that this was produced in a bake shop that is not gluten-free, which could, if somebody's actually celiac, could get very sick. Eating. But I feel like it's just been ignored for so long, and whether people are actually have gluten intolerances or celiac, or if it's just a dietary choice, it has become super popular over the years, and it's worth trying to make them good product. Like, it's worth it to not forget about an entire group of people who also like to eat baked goods. Those people exist. There are people out there who get sick eating cake, and they don't want to get sick eating cake because cake's supposed to be a fun memory, you know? So like, you shouldn't forget about those people.
I love it. I mean, yeah, we're in hospitality. So, I mean, it's really cool that you're doing this. So I guess my next question would be like, are there any products you have that you feel like are better actually gluten-free, or that you've just like made just a really good product that you'd be like, yeah, I could put this out to a gluten-free product and I think it'd be good, or
So,
gluten product.
yeah, right. So I make soft pretzels.
Okay.
And so they're not like, so you don't roll the dough out and shape it into a pretzel. So we make pretzel sticks,
Okay.
because it's a batter, so you have to pipe it. And I couldn't pipe a pretzel. Shockingly, it's very difficult. So we pipe them in a twist, but I'm very proud of that. I've reduced the xanthan gum almost down to a minuscule amount. It's just there to simply barely hold the product together. We have subbed out a ton of egg whites in it, so it's more of a natural product. It's less harsh on your stomach, and we still dip it in a we cook our baking soda off, so we create a like a lye solution, and we still dip it, and we top it with that crunchy awesome sea salt. And we have about 4 or 5 different flavors of pretzels that we do. And I think that it is, without a doubt, an equal product, if
Awesome.
not better than other pretzels. Yeah.
Great. Thank you for sharing that. I think that, I mean, it sounds delicious. I would definitely want to try it. So next time I'm in Pittsburgh, I will definitely come by. So what's the reception been like since you've started? I mean, obviously over the last year, it seems like it's going well, but like how has it been for you?
So I'm as soon as we opened, we had a huge following. So the bakery is called Gluten Free Goat, and the bakery has actually been around for quite some time, had about 4 or 5 years, I think. And whenever the pandemic hit, the owner sold the business, and it got shut down. And then the new owner came in, and he rebranded the product completely, and that's when I came on the team. So we have brand new product, brand new recipes. Everything about it is different than the original gluten-free goat. And a lot of people were, I mean, at first a lot of people were very confused, and we had to do a fair bit of social media presence and some media, just plain media presence, to try to get our name out there, saying like, hey, this is our bakery. Yes, it was gluten-free goat, and yes, it is still gluten-free goat, but it's a completely different experience. And we want you to come out, and we want you to try this. But once we got people to actually come out and try our stuff, they loved it. So we got really positive feedback, and we're constantly getting, every week we're selling more stuff. We're getting more orders. And right now what we're doing is we're just a ghost kitchen. So you have to place your stuff, your order online, and then you come to the kitchen and pick it up. So we don't have like a storefront or anything. So yeah, we're still in the baby steps of the bakery.
Awesome. Well, I wish you the best of luck. It sounds like, you're going to continue to have success, so it sounds really cool.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. So I guess if you want, could you go over kind of what you offer at the bakery?
Absolutely. So we have a pretty wide variety of donuts available. We have them in both regular and vegan. We have cookies. We have 5 flavors of cookies. We also have vegan cookies available. We do baguettes. We have focaccia. We have bagels. We have pretzels. We also have Pop Tarts. We do sweet and savory Pop Tarts. And I think that pretty much covers it. But within each of those categories, we have we have anywhere from 5 to 15 flavors of each of those products. And then we also offer them in regular gluten-free, soy-free, nut-free varieties, but we also offer them in vegan varieties as well.
Okay, awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Well, I mean, it sounds great, and just like I said, I think it's so cool that what you said earlier about having a menu so diverse for people who maybe haven't been able to enjoy this. Do you see like the future of like gluten-free goods? Like I mean, I can imagine it's only going to increase, but what What would you tell people that are like kind of interested in it but haven't really tried going to try gluten-free baked goods yet?
Like people are people who haven't eaten gluten-free baked goods or people who want to bake gluten-free baked goods?
People who want to bake gluten-free baked goods.
Okay. Okay. Got it. I would say, if you enjoy learning and you enjoy, getting to recreate things, I would say get into it because it's not going to be your cookie cutter recipes. It's not going to be anything you've ever learned in the past. It's really a great opportunity to almost start from scratch. So everything that you know about baking down to the mixing methods is completely reversed in gluten-free baking. So I think that it's going to be a really great environment for the baker who wants to keep learning.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be. Do you have any... Is there any resources or anything you would recommend maybe that you've found helpful on your journey to kind of learning all of this?
Yeah. So I read a book called Flavor Flowers by, I believe her name is Alice. Don't quote me on this. I don't know what her last name is. That's so bad.
I'll look it up and Flavor Flowers. I will put it in the show notes.
Okay. Yeah. Flavor Flowers. That pretty much just breaks down every aspect of the different ingredients that you can use in gluten-free baking, from oat flours to starches to binders. She actually won a James Beard for that book. And then also now as a CIA grad, I might be a little biased, but Chef Coppedge is one of the greats. So his book is timeless. And now we got that with our curriculum. But I would say go to Barnes & Noble and buy Chef Coppedge's gluten-free baking book because it really has a lot of information about the basics of gluten-free baking. And some really just like really good, solid recipes in his book as well.
Awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing all that. And I'm sure it will be helpful for anyone listening.
Yeah.
Great. So thank you so much for taking the time to go over all this. I mean, it's really been interesting for me. Definitely wanted to like learn more about gluten-free baking. I think you are obviously you're very knowledgeable about it. So you gave a really good description of everything. Where can people find you? Where can people order the goods at? If you just wanted to drop kind of social media, website, whatever here, that'd be great.
Yeah, so my personal social media is Pastry Chef Selena. I post pretty much everything that I make there, if it's like off the clock or if it's on the clock. Mm-hmm. And then our website is glutenfreegoat.com.
Okay.
And our social media handle for the bakery is glutenfreegoat. And there you can explore the website and get to see like action in the kitchen and just with that with the website you can order stuff. We do delivery within the city and you can pick up at the bakery. We are also exploring in the next year nationwide shipping, so that is our next goal in the next couple of months is working on packaging because we don't want to change our ingredients. We don't want to add preservatives or anything to it. So work on packaging and shipping and stuff like that. So Pastry Chef Selena and Gluten Free Goat Bakery.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And good luck on, you know, nationwide shipping.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, now that you've been on the show, the audience for Line Cook Thoughts, this podcast is I call them the Line Cook Nation. Basically it's a group of chefs, cooks, people in the food industry, who want to learn and grow with each other and are just curious about what else there is to offer in food. Now that you've been on the show, you've been able to talk to this group of people. What does that mean for you?
Anytime I get a chance to talk to my fellow chefs, pastry chefs, it really is. I love learning from other people. So I hope that I can teach somebody else just anything at all. Getting a chance to bring that community together is really great because I feel like a lot of times we're kind of pushed off to the corner and we're in our own little spaces in our own little kitchens and we don't have the opportunity to really explore and talk to other chefs. So I think that this is a great platform to get that knowledge out there and to feel connected to the giant community that is the culinary industry.
Awesome. Well, Chef, thank you so much for coming on the show. It truly has been a pleasure, and just wishing you the best on the bakery and everything else you're working on.
No, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And it was a pleasure talking to you as well.
Awesome. So there you have it, the interview with Chef Selena Progar. Thank you all so much for listening again. Go to the show notes or the description of this episode to go to glutenfreegoat.com. You'll be able to see all their products. I've also tagged in the show notes Chef Selena's Instagram handle so you can follow her. And just a reminder that, you know, she shared a lot about gluten-free baking. If this interests you, go and search for it. You know, take notes on what the book she said and what she offered, and recognize that, like, this is a whole world that you could immerse yourself into, especially if someone gluten-free in your life that is looking for great food. This could definitely be something, you know, that just is very fulfilling and very rewarding for you if you go down that path. So thank you all so much for listening. Chef, thank you so much for coming on, and I will see you all on the next Line Cook Thoughts podcast.